Welcome to the Teach the Geek podcast, where engineer and author Neil Thompson talks with STEM professionals about public speaking, a struggle for many of us. Whether you're a novice public speaker or a proficient one, you can always pick up tips on how to improve. Here's your host, Neil Thompson.
Welcome to another edition of Teach the Geek Interviews. My name is Neil Thompson. I'm the founder of Teach the Geek. It's an online platform for science and engineering professionals. You can learn more about it at teachthegeek.com. Again, that's teachthegeek.com. Today, my guest is Andrea Martin. She founded Andrea Martin Consulting to help people advance in their careers. She's also host of the Career Confessions podcast. I follow her on LinkedIn, and after commenting on one of her posts, she said that it'd be cool for us to have a conversation on a podcast. And I took that to mean, Neil, invite me to be a guest on your podcast. So I took the hint and invited her. And here we are now. Welcome to Teach the Geek Interviews, Andrea.
Thank you so much. I always enjoy your comments and your perspective. So it's always very, very fun to see your name pop up.
Excellent. So from the bit of research I did on you, I saw that your background is in chemical engineering. So what was the motivation to get that degree?
When I moved to the US, I had always been interested in math and science, and I had a little bit of a hard transition coming into a school in South America to a public school in the United States. So I had to really had to get caught up in a lot of classes. And I took the chemical engineering as a target because I felt it was a high enough target to make up for what I felt I had been held back for a couple of years. So I chose chemical engineering as a hard degree, as a challenge, something that blended chemistry with math. And the fun part was that it opened so many doors outside of chemical engineering that I would have never even known had I not taken that step.
Okay. Well, you obviously got caught up because you didn't just stop with a degree in chemical engineering. You got your MBA as well. What was the motivation to get that degree?
I was working internationally at the time. So I worked in oil and gas and the energy sector for over 12 years. And at that time, I was working for a service company. So I was physically living out in oil rigs in Mexico. I had done Abu Dhabi, Brazil, but at that time I was in Mexico. And I wanted to be the person leading the strategy, not just the execution. So I wanted to be on the other side of the table with the client. And I felt an MBA would be a good bridge to that part of that conversation. I found the University of Oklahoma had a master's in business with concentration in energy and finance. And that fit my story at the time. So I came back to the United States, and that's how I landed in Oklahoma. A lot of people ask me all the time, how'd you go from living all over to Oklahoma out of all places? And it was thanks to the University of Oklahoma.
Nice. So you got a degree in chemical engineering. I'm sure you mentioned you worked for some time and then you got an MBA. It's in between. Well, we'll take it in both steps. Once you graduated from chemical engineering to before you got your MBA, was the working world what you expected? And then did that change at all after you got your MBA?
When I was graduating from chemical engineering, I realized my plan from day one was I was going to go work in a pharmaceutical company. That was what I had envisioned. Probably can't tell you why, but I felt that was what I was being called to do until I was walking around the job fair talking to different companies. And one of them pretty much said, we look for engineers. We don't necessarily care what type of engineering background you are, but if you have gotten an engineering degree, you can learn what we do here. And it was very enticing because this recruiter specifically said that the job they were searching for got to work in the field. They were radioactive sources, you armed explosives on location. And I was really attracted to the idea of being in a very challenging environment. I would have never expected to be living on pickup trucks and oil rigs out of college, but I did that for almost 4 years. And the amount of stuff you learn by I was in the middle of the jungle for a while, being in the middle of the jungle, running highly technical jobs, running crews. I would have never gotten to learn what I did had I not been in that exposure, but I would have never thought of doing that really from from day one. So that was kind of put it in my path and I took it. When I decided it was time to go back to school and I wanted to get my MBA, I wanted to change the pace of my work schedule. I had done the field, I enjoyed it, but there's only so many nights you can sleep in a pickup truck before you wanted to go back home. And I remember thinking, I would like to just be able to take a shower in my own house every night and go and sleep in my own bed. And that's why I decided to reroute and go back into a, you know, go to business school and start stepping into more of the strategy side, which that was more what I was, then became an office job, which is what I think originally probably aimed for.
Okay. Yeah. I can't imagine having to sleep inside a pickup truck every night. I kind of like sleeping in a bed. I've kind of gotten used to it. Yes. So yeah, I could totally see the comfort difference between a pickup truck and an actual bed for sure. But, you know, I mentioned also in the intro that you now have Andrea Martin Consulting. So at some point you decided to go off on your own. What Yes. prompted you to make that decision?
About 3.5, well, almost 4 years ago, actually, because my son will be four here in July. I remember thinking, okay, I have two kids. I work in a very volatile environment, which if you work in oil and gas, I mean, it's very cyclical. It's just the nature of the beast. You make great money, but at the same time, there isn't that security of, will your job always be there regardless of performance? And as I was climbing the corporate ladder, I knew that I wanted to continue to do that, but I wanted also some security. I've been the breadwinner of my family from day one. I'm the one that created the lifestyle for my family. And I wanted to protect what I had created for my nucleus. So when I decided to start a side hustle, essentially, in my own business, I started with, okay, my first plan will be cover your mortgage, cover your bills. So, you know, in case something were to happen, you guys are taken care of. My family's taken care of. There's a roof over their heads and there's food on the table. And what that allowed me to do actually was show up at work without fear. And as a leader of a large organization, I was able to just do the right thing without feeling that I always had to play the political game. I wasn't worried about who or what side am I going to be in? Who do I need to kiss, butt a little bit? I didn't have to worry about that. So it helped me show up unapologetic. However, over the last 3 years, I don't do anything for the sake of doing it. And I was like, if this is growing at a specific pace, why could it not grow faster? And I decided to grow it as big as I could. And July of really 2021, as I was approaching July of 2021, I had to make a decision. My consulting business was starting to become bigger than what I could do in a very part-time focus. And I saw the potential of just transitioning full time into that, which was bigger than my corporate career. And I went all in. And I think I've always had that entrepreneur bug, and I've always wanted to be an entrepreneur. And it was just time to rip the Band-Aid because I had been so long in one specific journey of the corporate ladder that there was an identity attached to that. However, I did the pros and cons. And I realized, okay, it's time. Follow your passion. The corporate world is not going anywhere, but you have to go all into this. And I'm almost a year in, and I am currently building a second business right now. And I don't think I would have been able to do that had I not taken that step.
Wow. I commend you. And because, you know, a lot of people have these aspirations to start their own thing, but they get caught up in, well, I have this, you know, W-2 employee job. They pay me every other week. The money's pretty good. It's really difficult to leave that type of situation for the uncertainty of entrepreneurship or self-employment. So I commend you for making that decision. With the people that you work with in your consulting business, what do they get from working with you?
The biggest focus for my area of coaching is you're either in a trajectory right now and you feel that you're not going as fast as you could. maybe you're seeing people go a little bit faster than you, that you're not necessarily seeing them be more qualified, having more years. So there's a little bit of lack of strategy. The biggest thing, and one of the biggest pillars of my consulting business, is your positioning within a company and your positioning within the market. So how are you going to stand out in a sea of people that are potentially very similar to you, but at the same time, I don't focus necessarily on job search. Usually is you're in a company you like, you're in a place where you see the potential, but the right eyes are not on you internally. So a lot of my focus, I would say 80%, is internal positioning, so you can claim the next promotion faster. To give an example, I had a client about 7 months ago now who was starting to feel that the runway was ending in her company. We got to work, we re-strategized, we created a networking plan that fit her personality. And right now she has four managers fighting for her internally for different positions and in different cities in the United States, simply because they were able to see that untapped potential that was sitting there. So now she has too many options. So we're working through the overwhelm of which one do I choose? But that's a better overwhelm that the runway is ending. This is a more fun problem to have.
No question. So I'm kind of curious, the focus that you have with your clients, how did you decide to, I guess, drill down on having that particular focus for your business?
It really starts from a personal story. I found that's what attracted people to my story originally. I have been someone very intentional with my growth. There has not been a year. I might have mentioned this recently in one of my podcasts, but I've had 12 years of being the top 1% of every company that I've worked in, and that's been very intentional. So this is over 14 bosses, three different companies. And so there's a plan that I kind of put in place for myself, and I've honed in over time, and I've been putting that blueprint for my clients. And I love that. I love the idea of sitting down and thinking, what are the blind spots in your plan? How can we adjust them so you don't feel like you're running into the same issues over and over? And I prefer to do that work more. That's why I have a start time sometimes calling myself a career coach, because usually people think of career coaches, oh, they're doing your resume and they're, you know, helping you with job search. Well, that could be a part of what we do. I'm big in the strategy. I'm big in the positioning. I'm big in your performance. And I found that clients that resonated with that got pretty incredible results, you know, in the upwards of 70 to 100K increase a year in salary. And that's life-changing.
Yeah, for sure. Yeah, you know, you're right. When you do think of career coach, you think of helping them find the next place, because wherever they are, there's something about it that perhaps they're not too happy about, and they're looking to make that move, but make that move to where, and maybe they even want to move into a different industry. And how do you move into a different industry if you've never worked in that industry before? And a career coach can help you with that. But if you want to stay where you're at, and you just need to figure out the way to kind of get the position that you want and be that advocate for yourself, so the people that make those kind of decisions know who you are, you get that visibility, then yeah, working with someone like you would certainly be helpful. You know, Andrea, the whole purpose of this podcast, when I first put it together, this YouTube channel, it was to help people like myself, because I struggled giving presentations in front of people. I struggled being that advocate for myself. And I saw the benefit of it, because as you so aptly mentioned, there could very well be people that are less qualified than you, but because they are better at just advocating for themselves and just being visible, and the decision makers know their name, they get those promotions, they get those pay raises that you think you deserve. But because you're that, you know, that geeky engineer that thinks that I could just do my work and people will notice. Well, no, they won't notice. And looking back on it, it's kind of foolish that I thought that they would, because, you know, other people, they got their own concerns that they're thinking about. You're not top of mind to them. Why would you think you are? It's kind of arrogant to think that way. I mean, when I think about it, you have to be the one to bring yourself to their attention, to think, okay, well, maybe this person should be the one that takes on that role. You can't just rely on just your work. But I guess one of the avenues to become that advocate for yourself is you have to become comfortable talking in front of other people. And that's something that I certainly had to work on, but I eventually did see the benefit of it. Out of curiosity, with your own life, when did you see the benefit of getting better at presenting or speaking in front of others?
There's so many instances that I can think of. And to one of the great points that you made, you know, I always say college did us a little bit of a disservice because they give you a syllabus, right, for every semester. So you know exactly what to do in order to get the A. There is no hidden code that you have to unlock to get the A. And then you go into the corporate world and there is no syllabus. There is no checklist. Doing the work doesn't necessarily result in the A every single time. You might have to be showing the exam to everyone around you and showing how you did it and why you did it a specific way. When it came to public speaking, you know, having moved to the United States and as a teenager, my accent was always something I was very self-conscious about. And I found myself being more reserved with using my voice in order, because one, it was gut-wrenching when someone asked me to repeat myself. I felt that I said something wrong, or if I repeat myself and they still don't understand me, well, I have to repeat myself again. And especially as you're growing up and that's already something that you feel more sensitive towards, that just kind of puts it, all the nerves go into hyperdrive and then you can feel your face getting really red. One of the things that really helped me was what does my voice mean? And how can I utilize it to send my message? And instead of focusing of, yes, you have an accent, or yes, sometimes when you get really nervous, that accent might really, you know, appear as if I just came from Peru yesterday, but what does that voice mean? And I felt that my voice was my superpower. It was the avenue for me to create a bridge into solutions that I was bringing forward, ideas that I had. And once I just rewrote for me what it meant, it let go of the necessity of being perfect every time. Another thing that I've done over time has been, I have watched people, and I'm big on observation. There are people in your organization, in your life, that do this really well. Why do you feel that they do it really well? What skills are they bringing to the table? And how can you, instead of looking at them and saying good for them, think, oh, that's something I would love to bring into my toolbox as well. And Toastmasters was a great tool for me. I did Toastmasters for several years. I found them to be extremely helpful. And I love the idea of just putting myself out there. If you go back and look at some of my first Instagram lives, I don't anymore, because sometimes it's a little bit, I do when I want to humble myself and look at the growth that I've had. But even some of the trainings that I did 3 years ago, when I'm going through my archive, I'm like, wow, I would not be able to speak the way I do now had I not had those moments, and just allowing messy action to take place, because you will get better if you allow messy. Messy will be part of the journey, but you got to put yourself out there.
No question. Absolutely. And, you know, for what it's worth, my first few podcast interviews weren't all that great either. And English is the only language I got. So I mean, what's my excuse? People ask me to repeat myself. It's just, hey man, I messed up. I'm sorry. English is
That's
it.
Awesome.
So for the presentations that you do now, do you have a process for putting them together? And if so, what is it?
I am a big fan of over-preparing, and I love to have the structure of my slides first. Right now, my presentations look a little bit differently maybe than they did in a year ago in my corporate job. So my corporate job, most of my presentations were either to the board of directors or perhaps to an external organization. And probably one of the last presentations I did was to add maybe a little bit more nerves to the new board of directors that had just come in place. And essentially we were gonna educate on what the organization did, why, and how we were gonna take it to the next level. The biggest thing always, number one, is think of the audience. What is the right level of detail that makes sense for the audience? The right level of detail that I might bring to another group of engineers versus the board of directors is gonna look very different. And being able to foresee where are going to be the areas that might derail the message away from the purpose of the meeting. And one of the things that I've learned, especially as you get higher up, is derailing into one area because someone, perhaps that one person has a finance background, being mindful of who you have in front of you. Okay, I know maybe Neil is going to want to ask me a question on this one specific slide. How can I be sure that I answer that question without it being a full-on 20 minutes sidebar that perhaps wasn't the best use of our time? So being able to understand your audience, number one, the right level of detail, number two, and then three, what is the overall purpose of your presentation? It's not for them to hear you for 20 minutes. I know that that might sound fun, but really at the end of the day, what is the message that they need to get away with? And it's not more slides, it might mean less slides, and starting with a very concise end goal in mind. If you can do those three things, you will remove a lot of noise. I have learned and I've seen, especially younger engineers, get really flustered when perhaps the next slide had that answer, and now they're stuck in one, having to derail and say, oh, we'll get there. Be ready to answer the questions that are gonna, be ready to have a mini script on, that's a great question, that's actually being answered in the next slide. Here in the next 2 seconds, I'll answer it. Have some scripts ready to go. That way you don't feel flustered in the moment to come up with the words, and have a script ready to go for what are you going to say when you don't know the answer. So kind of have your backup plan in place and always follow up. If you didn't know the answer, you better follow up by the end of the day with the answer, especially if you have high stakeholders present.
No question. You know, I was at an event yesterday, and there were two presentations. And after watching watching both of the presentations, it made me realize how important my platform of Teach the Geek is. So it was some of the most boring presentations I've ever sat through in quite some time. And that's saying a lot. You know, it's the first one was just, you know, with a whole lot of, it reminded me when I first started giving presentations and how crappy they were. Because what I ended up doing was I put a lot of stuff on slides and I'd read them. And that's essentially what this person did. And it's very difficult to engage an audience when you're reading the slides. At least the second guy, he was a little better. That first person, he also went over time. So the whole agenda got thrown out of whack. I think that's something a lot of people don't take into account when they're giving presentations is going over and the effect that has on the entire event. It's just, it made me think, you know, I'm not a unicorn in, you know, because Teach the Geek started because of my own struggles. And I noticed that other people had those struggles too. And that became even more apparent yesterday. So I'm gonna keep going on with this Teach the Geek stuff. Cause I think there's certainly a need there. When it comes to, I guess, dealing with nerves, do you ever get nervous before you give a presentation? And if so, how do you deal with those nerves?
I always have those nerves, and I enjoy them because the moment that I don't feel those nerves, I wonder, if I don't feel those nerves, is this not something that's really going to stretch me outside my comfort zone? And there's always a good sign when you feel those nerves. It's to me, it means that I'm doing something that I'm going to learn from here in the next probably 20, 30 minutes. And you made an excellent point. And just, because I really want to stress on something you said, which if you go over time, you're assuming that people will give you the time. And a lot of the times you might be networking, and it might not be a presentation to a board of directors, but you might have only 15 minutes with a senior executive, and their schedule is blocked most likely every 15 minutes. So if your message is not wrapped up by 15 minutes, you've missed an opportunity. So don't assume people will give you the time. I think that's the biggest thing that I would love for everyone to remember is you have 20 minutes. And if someone else ate up 5 minutes of yours and now you have 15, can you still deliver your message in 15 minutes? Practice if you have to. Practice speeding up, cutting certain pieces, or practice filling in maybe an additional 5 minutes because someone else didn't fill them in. But just be ready for both sides. And if the nerves are very, very common, but at the same time, practice. And I say this and it sounds simple, but it's so easy to not practice. I have clients that are going for high stake presentations and I go, send me a recording of the presentation before you do it. Oh, well, I've kind of already gone through it. No, I want start to finish multiple times. And guess what? When they do that, they're like, oh, this was a place where I got hung up. because we don't take practice as serious as we should. And you can have all the nerves in the world, but if you're practicing, you're ready, that will diminish as you go on. So nerves doesn't mean that you're not prepared, but nerves without preparation, now that's a dangerous combo.
No question. And I really like what you said about the not being nervous might be actually a sign of maybe this isn't something that I care all that much about anyway. So the nerve is actually something that you should embrace as opposed to thinking this is something that needs to go away, because it likely will never go away. And if you care about what you're talking about, you probably should be a little nervous just because you're concerned about how people will take in what you're saying. Will they take in what you want them to take in? That kind of thing. I think that's really important. And you know what ended up happening with that presentation yet with that event yesterday is the second speaker did have to speak less. He got less time, and luckily he was able to pull it together and present in enough time to bring the presentation or the event back on time. It was unfortunate, you know, given that the first person went over, but at least the second speaker was versatile or flexible enough to be able to pull it back onto time. You know, I mentioned in the intro that you also have a podcast, Career Confessions. What's the podcast about and what do you hope people take from it?
I love the podcast because it allows me to talk about things that are current in my life, learnings that I'm taking, and I'm in a growing season for myself, and growing pains are very real, that you aim for the next level. And a lot of people will tell you, well, and you see a lot of, I call it the fluffy side of Instagram or social media, where they just show you I aimed for this goal and I got this goal and now I'm winning. And they don't tell you about the meltdowns that occurred late at night because you were going after bigger goals, the times where you felt that you were doubting yourself and how did you surpass that? So there's a lot of mindset checks along the way and sharing real, like the realness of, hey, I'm a mom of two very small kids. I'm running two businesses. I still have aspirations. I have a partner that, you know, I like to spend time with, you know, on top of everything else that we have to do. And I just like to keep it real. So I'm big on sharing the pains as well as the gains and how I personally move past those pain points too. So that's important to me. So a lot of realness. That's my goal.
Okay. You know, I think you're right about social media and how people like to promote all the benefits. You know, I got that. Just like you said, I had this goal and I achieved the goal, but what happened in between having the goal and actually achieving the goal, where there are a bunch of failures on the way of achieving that goal? Did the goal change because of those failures? You know, all these different questions that perhaps people have, but you're not answering them. You're just giving all the fluffy stuff. Damn liars.
No, like it gets in there like I went from 0 to 50K months, you know, I'm like, okay, well, how many 0 months did you have before you got to 50K months? Like, are you talking about that? Like, you know, it's just like, yeah, that sounds really nice. 0 to 50K. Oh, I was at 0 for 5 years before I got to that. You know, you never know.
Oh man. Sometimes you'll hear you got the 50K months, but you spent, you know, 60K in ads to get to the 50K month. So, you know, you're talking about profit, you're talking about revenue. It's like, oh man,
that's real right there. That's so true.
So this has been great talking to you, Andrew. Thank you so much for being a guest. How can people get in touch with you?
I love hanging out on LinkedIn. I think it's become my favorite platform. So I'm at linkedin.com/AndreaMartinMBA. I'm also on Instagram. I answer DMs all the time. So just, you know, send me a note if you got a learning or a takeaway. I always like to challenge everyone to have a takeaway of everything that you do. I mean, you listen to things, you're starting to grow. What is the one thing that you want to take from every episode that Neil does, start maybe putting that into action? But always love to hear any feedback from the audience.
Excellent. Well, everyone, that marks the end of another edition of Teach the Geek Interviews. My name is Neil Thompson, founder of Teach the Geek. It's an online platform for science and engineering professionals. And you can find out more about it at teachthegeek.com. Again, that's teachthegeek.com. And until next time, take care and stay safe. Thanks, Andrea.
Thank you.
Well, everyone, that marks another episode in the can. I hope you enjoyed it. If you like these episodes and want to support Teach the Geek, please subscribe, share, and like on any of your favorite podcast platforms, or on all of them. Also, if you prefer to watch the episodes,
head on over to the YouTube channel at youtube.teachthegeek.com. Until next time.